It's the Friday postgame show from the internet. I'm Dave Kohler.
I'm Dan, occasionally known from the internet, also with a last name that's completely unpronounceable, but hi, how are you doing?
You're gonna
this
have
is
to
all
work
you get.
That out. You're not, it's not unpronounceable, it's just long. It's totally pronounceable. There it is, for those who are watching.
Dan Evans Nakamura, for those who are listening.
I prefer the people who are listening. And in fact, I've stripped away all the graphics for two reasons. One, I don't have time. Two, we're not supposed to just grab images off Google and put them on. I know this is the postgame show and it's members only and it's not going out to the public, but you're not supposed to do that. So Malcolm is still risking it with that.
That's what we do at the Friday postgame. We go through extra lengths to deliver you the content that you otherwise would not be getting. Remember?
Exactly. You're right. We have jobs. And there's a lot today. Some, not quite inside baseball, but it's about TYT stuff that Dan's going to be central in. And I have a bunch of articles, one that I want to spend a lot of time on. But let's just get into it. I'm going to start with a few small things. My Latin American roundup. If you want to continue reading while I do this, feel free. If not, you can listen to me. So in Mexico, AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the president who was recently elected, he's taking office December 1st, has said that he's going to, once he takes office, eliminate inspectors from the federal government. He's not going to fire them. He's going to have them do other things, but he's not going to have them do inspections. These are inspections like inspecting restaurants and taxation inspections and inspection of construction. And his thought is these inspectors in Mexico, he's correct, are all paid off through bribes. So they're not really doing an effective job anyway. And they're just making it life hard for everybody. So I'm just going to get rid of them. And he said he's going to trust the people to do the right thing. I thought this was something out of The Onion. I couldn't believe this has got to be a joke. If not, it's the most dramatic social experiment since the Russian Revolution.
Yeah.
You can't, this is crazy if he actually implements this.
Yeah, so he's supposed to be kind of the like Mexican progressive kind of person, right? And so he's just getting rid of all of these seemingly checks and regulations. I mean, it's very strange sounding on the surface.
It's so crazy. I'm not sure I believe that it's going to happen. If it does, I'll be very interested to see how it works.
Where was the story?
Where?
Like, where'd you read it?
On some Mexican English language news website.
Hopefully it's not a satirical one.
I don't think it is, because there's a bunch of other stories that are real and boring and completely unfunny. So
maybe they just don't have a sense of humor.
I mean, that's December 1st. I am looking forward
to his
presidency.
Maybe you just don't get their sense of humor.
Yeah.
You never know. Maybe it's just lost in translation.
It was written in English for me. So we'll see how that goes.
I tried.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to Bolsonaro winning in Brazil, which is this Sunday. I'm scared out of my mind and I don't even live there. That guy is a far right-wing, militaristic, violent lunatic.
Yeah, we did a segment about him on No Filter, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But he is, and we talked about it on Damage Report as well, which we'll talk about a little bit.
And we talked a little bit about it on this show. You weren't here. So I guess everyone's talking about it.
Everyone's talking about it. And we usually don't talk about Brazilian politics. I love talking about world news generally. I think we should do more of it. But he's really scary. I think, like, Trump's quotes are ridiculous and we've gotten, I almost don't even realize that horse face was actually this week. But there's a quote from Bolsonaro where he was talking about a female journalist or some other critic of him and said in response to her, I would rape her, but she's too ugly or something to that like kind of a quote.
That was years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, it's crazy.
But just this week, a female journalist was approached by some hoodlum with a knife threatening her that if Bolsonaro gets into office, he's going to take care of her or something like that.
He said he's fine with a like bloody coup where innocent civilians get killed. Endorsed by the Wall Street Journal, so you know, the WSJ bump might get. Do you know if the Wall Street Journal is in Portuguese?
No.
Okay, I don't know about that.
Wait, what? What is it called in Portuguese?
No, I'm like, do they have the Wall Street Journal in Portuguese?
I doubt it. No, I don't know, but I doubt it. But they can endorse him without having it to be in Portuguese. All right, that's Sunday. I guess he's going to win. He's leading in the polls, unless there's a real huge social movement in the next couple of days against him. Everyone will be reporting on that next week.
All right, everything sucks.
Yeah, since we're enjoying, I couldn't find more on Latin America, but I found a really interesting article on the Bosnia, which is another thing we never talk about, and I'm completely unqualified to talk about. But since the Dayton Accords from 1995, which govern now how Bosnia is ruled, it was the civil war country in the 90s, they have a rotating presidency, every 8 months, there's three presidents, they rotate every 8 months. And they just had elections. So there's a Serbian representative, a Croatian representative, and a Muslim. The Serbian guy who just won is a serious hardliner who outright said, I don't care who the other two presidents are. When I'm president, I'm going to do things only for the Serbian people. And it's a multi-ethnic state. That's not right. That's why you have civil wars, because you help one and neglect the other groups. On the other hand, the Croatian side had a hardliner who was in office who lost. He was the guy who was only helping the Croatians, and he lost. So in this little battle, the Serbian voters are the bad guys. The Croatian voters at least kicked their own guy out. And then the third guy's a Muslim who I don't know much about because the article didn't say anything about him, but he's a long-term establishment guy. His family's been in politics forever. So he's probably very mainstream. But Bosnia, interesting and very complicated government. If you want to read about it in Wikipedia, it'll make your head spin. They have multiple parties and
it rotates.
Everything rotates, and it's exactly the opposite of what the US ideally is, where it's a melting pot, but we all come together in politics and elect, you know, in a Republican system, our leaders.
Do things get done there? Because it seems like with a rotating government and you have those kinds of issues, especially when you know, just the far right everywhere is rushing up, and so racial tensions are a little bit higher. A government kind of partitioned that way doesn't seem like it does anything, although like I'm not saying that America's government is partitioned in the perfect way either, because clearly we don't do anything either. But like, I know you're completely unqualified, and I'm incredibly unqualified to talk about Bosnia, but do you know how things get done?
I don't know if anything really needs to get done. It's not a modern, sophisticated country, you know, so you don't need as much government pulling the levers as you do in US, Canada type, Western Europe. But that's an ignorant comment. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a guess.
We're just showing off our incredible qualifications here.
You're right. So moving on, I have two more short things before we get to the big story and then the local TYT related conversation. We haven't heard much in a long time about the Volkswagen emissions scandal. This is where the Volkswagen engineers cheated on the emissions tests in the US and Europe so that their cars would pass, even though they were violating what should have been the emission standards. And Volkswagen got massively in trouble for that, big fines, people thrown out of their jobs. But I've read recently that it wasn't just Volkswagen, it was several European car companies, including some like Audi that is a subsidiary of VW. So it wasn't just Volkswagen, something was going on that all at the same time, these European engineers thought that they could cheat the emissions tests by putting in computer programs. But they're getting caught and they're getting fined heavily. And I was surprised, the Audi chief executive was actually jailed awaiting trial. You know, what we always talk about here in Lib TYT land, when are they gonna jail the corrupt bankers and all? Here in Europe, they jailed the CEO of Audi for
it's music to my ears. I love
it. Yeah, all right. So that's that. The final short story is about Barbara Underwood. Do you know who she is?
Absolutely not.
She is the Attorney General of New York State. She came in when Schneiderman had to leave office for, what did he do? A sex scandal, I guess?
Probably.
She's great. Rachel Maddow, who I'm not a fan of, did a fantastic segment on her a few months ago on her show that I randomly caught, and I was very impressed. This woman, unfortunately, is only in office for like less than a year. She's going out, I guess, January 1st. New York's electing a new attorney general in 2 weeks. But she's been fantastic. What Rachel Maddow focused on is that she, in whatever position she was, or maybe as attorney general, pursued some very minor seeming case related to Michael Cohen. And one thing led to another, and it rode right up to Robert Mueller's level. And this is what started Cohen on the road to flipping over to cooperating with Mueller. So she's done great work. What she's doing now is, apparently, when the who regulates the internet?
FCC
Getting rid of net neutrality. They had it open for public comments.
Right. Wait, the first or the second time? During Obama administration or the Trump administration?
I don't know. I mean, it's all the same effort, isn't it? Is there a distinction?
No, but like the original time the FCC left it up for public comment was during the Obama administration, and that was onto whether or not to adopt net neutrality rules. And people said overwhelmingly yes, like a bunch of comments came in. And then when Trump came in and Ajit Pai, the new chair of the FCC, decided that they wanted to get rid of net neutrality laws. Oh, I wonder why. Check out Ajit Pai, used to work for Verizon. That's fun. But he worked to get rid of net neutrality laws. And when comments started flooding in saying, we don't want you to repeal net neutrality, he just started ignoring the comments and closing them and filtering them.
Well, I don't know which of those two efforts it was. Probably the second, but
they're drastically
different.
The point
is that, to add to what you're saying, because you missed this, millions of comments came in supporting the repeal of net neutrality. But what Barbara Underwood has discovered and is investigating and now prosecuting is that those millions and millions of comments are all fake.
Yeah.
They were sent by robots, and the companies who have interest in getting rid of net neutrality,
which is so
created those
believable
comments. And all those millions of fake comments are overwhelmingly in favor of getting rid of net neutrality. But the real comments, which you can identify by the who sent it, and they're obvious what's real and what's fake, we're all, yes, as you say, overwhelmingly in support of net neutrality. But Barbara Underwood, just the Attorney General of New York, she's not a national figure, is pursuing this, and good for her. I hope she has enough time to leave an impact, because she's out of office in a few months.
And for those left in suspense, this would be the second time I'm referring to, because it would have been during the Trump administration. Because I did hear something about them discovering that even though Ajit Pai was accusing the people who are in support of net neutrality of being of sending the bots and duplicating the comments, it turned out that the people who were against net neutrality were, which was just great irony.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder when we're going to jail them. No, yeah, we're not
jailing. No. Well, she might, or it might lead to something else.
Not in this country.
All right, so one more article then. Let's just do it before we get to my TYT stuff. This was an article in the New York Times a few weeks ago. Definitely check it out, because we may not do it justice. It was an excellent article, very well reported, about FEMA and rebuilding in hurricane and storm zones. So the first thing I want to acknowledge is how good of a report it was, and also how complicated it is, and how now, this is a little bit of inside baseball. It's very difficult to read a long article like that and then summarize it briefly without boring everyone before you can get to the opinions, which is the easy part. And so you know, the main show production group, Anna Jank and everybody who helps them, they spend a lot of time on this issue. Who's going to present and how? And they spend a lot of time taking an article and reworking it so that they can present it to the audience. Maybe you do it too on the shows you work on or are involved in this.
To some extent, yeah.
So it's just a little inside note that takes a lot of time here, and it's not easy.
Right, yeah, because there's a lot going on working on that kind of aspect. I can attest to it, because you have to make sure that the host is able to present it in a way that cuts the essence of the story and includes the details. But obviously, you can't just rehash the entire story.
Right.
It doesn't really work, and you can't leave out important details. And so that's when it's really kind of a editorial skill that you have to kind of work at,
right,
to include what's relevant, what's like less of a detail, or what can be worked into commentary and opinion later on. So maybe one of the little details that you don't mention in the beginning when you're just giving expository information about the story, you can work in to talk about your opinion.
Right, but you gotta be careful not to miss something. Often I do this when Steve and Malcolm are around, and I'll start a story, and without trying to be jerks, which they can be sometimes, Steve especially, they'll ask me a question. Oh, what
about
this? And I'll say, I don't know about that. And it's very important, and I missed it, because it's hard to prepare. But enough of that prelude. Let me get to the story. The story is about how FEMA has a program called the Public Assistance Program, where they fund rebuilding destroyed buildings after disasters. But this particular program has very little authority over how things are rebuilt. It leaves a lot of that authority in the local hands. Louisiana gets way, way a disproportionate amount of this funding for obvious reasons. They get smacked by these hurricanes and floods all the time. So the article focuses a lot on a few cases in Louisiana. But it's the whole story of this FEMA public assistance program exemplifies just bad governance, bad policy, in many ways, which I'm going to get to. And Well, I'm going to get back to the issue of bad governance, but let's start. So the rules of this FEMA public assistance program are they're supposed to fund, give money to rebuild, but they originally, or a few years back, Obama issued an executive order saying that they had to consider climate change in their decisions of when and where to rebuild. Guess what? Trump rescinded that executive order. So FEMA can't do that anymore. So first aside, liberals sometimes can drive you crazy. They want everyone to accept the goddamn reality of climate change and start adapting. I do too. But people are backwards. Why couldn't Obama's executive order have said FEMA must take into account the likelihood of another storm hitting this an area before rebuilding? Why do they have to say you must take into account climate change?
I think because, so when I was like reading and summarizing the story, which I did, haha, you thought I couldn't. It was the idea that FEMA was preparing to say, okay, this was a really bad storm. It was uncharacteristically bad. So we're going to replace the infrastructure that we had for storm prevention, kind of dealing with first response and all that. We're going to repair it as we would a storm from 2 years ago. Not this freak storm that we just had, but like the average hurricane that you would normally expect. And then, like you've been hearing with climate change, mm-hmm. every single year we keep breaking records for what is worse. Or
more
like
in storms.
Aggregate, the storms get more intense. FEMA builds a new thing or tries to build a new thing. And because they didn't adhere to the standards that climate change is actually talking about, then you lose that.
But that doesn't really address what I'd like them to try, which is to write a standard or an executive order or a regulation saying FEMA should take into account the increasing intensity of hurricanes. The right wing, the Republicans can't say, get that climate change crap out of there. There's nothing to do with climate change. It's just that hurricanes are increasing intensity. A lot of climate change deniers don't even deny that hurricanes are increasing in frequency and intensity.
Yeah, I don't know why they worded it.
Because they insist they want to ram down the backwards minds of most of these troglodytes who deny that climate change is real.
I don't think that's why they would have written it to be effective. They can make their climate change soapbox conversation anywhere else, but they want to write it to be effective. I have no reason why
they should do it the way I say. They're not concerned about climate change. They're concerned about increasing intensity and frequency of hurricanes.
Okay. Whatever you say, Chairman Dave.
That's just one of many things that I want to say about this article. So FEMA can, in this case, fund to relocate structures only if it's cost effective. Usually it's not. Furthermore, local officials are incentivized or just interested because they're local to rebuild in their locality. So they don't want to move it. And if they say, no, I want to rebuild this school or this jail or this hospital here, FEMA has to give them the money. And then of course another storm comes a few years later and wrecks it again. So they talk about a few cases. One was a jail that is now mostly empty. It was destroyed, I guess, in Katrina. The local sheriff in Plaquemines County wanted to rebuild it in place. FEMA tried to dissuade him. He insisted, and so they rebuilt it. FEMA is allowed to take into account flooding and all that, so they built it on stilts. They built it big. They built it beautiful.
It was tremendous.
It was a tremendous jail, but it's half empty now. Furthermore, this sheriff—
It couldn't stand against the big water, the ocean water.
This sheriff is corrupt. In fact, he was eventually jailed for taking bribes in the construction of this jail. And then a few years ago, he died at age 66. But so he made money off it, but also it's good for his patronage because by building this jail and then you have contracts that you can issue to service the jail, so he gets to control all that. So his interest, and he had all the control over this, was just to rebuild in place, big expensive jail. FEMA pays for it, no local initiatives, no oversight on how to spend the money or where to rebuild. And it's a terrible system. Another case is an airport in Louisiana, a small airport that was built in the 30s. It's not really necessary now, but it was destroyed. FEMA had to pay $68 million to rebuild it. $20 million of that just went to renovate a big area, which is used as a fancy ballroom for parties at the airport. So it's just a criminal waste of money because of just the weakness of the regulation and the policy and the dynamic of how the federal and local forces play into it. But there were limits. So the people who were wanted to rebuild this airport again that wasn't necessary in the first place in a storm vulnerable area wanted to build a $65 million anti-flooding system. Remember, the airport cost $68 million. So FEMA, for that, they had a big review and they voted, whoever the committee is, 2-1 that flood system is not part of a rebuild. That's a new build. So they rejected it. So I'm glad they reject it, but I'm not glad, because if they're going to spend $68 million to build the airport and they don't have the flood protection, then it is going to get flooded out again.
It's like public infrastructure catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand this really, because my only point of reference are earthquakes in California.
Right.
And is that we have earthquakes in California and then buildings fall down and we go, wow, we don't want that to happen again. And even though earthquakes aren't exactly like climate change where they're getting worse, although the big one is allegedly coming, we try to build things with worse disasters in mind. And I feel like that was just kind of how we always did things.
Right.
I'm surprised that, you know, in Tornado Alley in that part of America, I'm sure that they don't go, oh, let's make sure that this can withstand an EF3 tornado, when we go, wait, EF5s happen.
Right.
So maybe we should go the extra mile and do the EF5. And that's just only one aspect of it. It's also I feel like when people, or conservatives specifically, want to argue about having you privatize everything, they want to create the system within government so that it's so broken and it sucks and has these different stakeholders here that are totally misaligned with these different interests here, and then people going left and right, and you have things like that where they have to say, no, this is a separate project from this, and the whole thing is a moot point anyways because it's going to get destroyed in the next like flood or hurricane.
Right.
So I think that's what they try to do, is just death by a thousand cuts, to try to make the argument that you can profit off of this and do a better job, when ultimately, and this is why I think people on the left argue this wrong, you can have bad government. You can say, yeah, government sucks. I hate going to the DMV. But making the DMV a private entity doesn't necessarily make it better.
Right.
We have private health insurance companies and we hate them. It's an anxiety-inducing process to call to my health insurance company, which is actually one of the better ones. But all the same incentives and stakeholders are there doesn't mean that just because it's public or private, it's any better run. You actually just get people to run it better and change some of the processes in that and set those in stone and actually work through the problems. But that's only if we had a government that wanted to do those kinds of things.
Now, what you're saying is an excellent segue to my final point about the FEMA situation, except I'm going to diverge. I went to DMV yesterday. I had an appointment to get a new driver's license. In and out the door in less than an hour and a half. Perfectly lovely. A lot of waiting in line, but not so bad. An hour and a half total. I had to wait in one. So I have an appointment, so I go in and I have to wait in line. Then I had to wait in line to use a computer. Then I had to wait in line to submit a form. Then I had to wait in line to fill out the paperwork. Then I finally had to wait in line to get the photo taken. So five lines, but still an hour and a half is not bad.
Yeah.
And So it was good. It worked.
As a quick aside, not to totally throw this off kilter, but if you plan going to the DMV properly, it's actually not that bad. You just have to go, like maybe you plan a couple weeks or months in advance and get the appointment, and then
California.
Make sure you fill out the forms online as much as possible. And kind of once you go to the DMV a couple of times, you know what you're doing. And I think it gets a bad rep because the DMV deals with everybody, especially in a place like LA where everyone's driving.
Right.
And so some people are more prepared than others in life. And so the non-prepared ones make the lines longer. But if you know what you're doing, then it's not a horrible experience.
Yeah,
they're getting a little bit better.
Well, they are, but it was horrible maybe 10 years ago. So
it's still horrible today. Like the DMV's manufacturers Republicans. I still agree with that statement.
Yeah, well, they have a nice picture of Jerry Brown up there because he's the governor. So what you were talking about was good governance. And I just remark that that is so rarely discussed in campaigns. There's a bunch of issues, abortion, taxes, climate change, immigration, blah, you can go on and on. Just the issue of being a good bureaucrat, good governance is so rarely discussed. Of course, the reason's obvious. It doesn't inspire people. It's boring. It doesn't drive the base. But that's what Obama was, you know, we're all disappointed in him. But he was a good governor, you know, good president in terms of governance. And he had tried to have good policy, had good intentions. Hillary, of course, would have been excellent at that too. Her whole life has cared about things, regardless of what you think about how she was corrupted by corporate influence. And the Republicans have no interest in good governments at all. And we all know that. This is never an issue, or almost never, in any congressional, Senate, presidential race. It just doesn't hit the public radar for obvious reasons. But what we do on the postgame show is put things on the radar that are not there. So I'm putting it on the radar now.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt. I just got to give you some DMV advice.
Let's hear it.
Quickly.
Bartman.
Hey, with the exception of renewing for a driver's license, because you have to go to the DMV for a driver's license, do you have AAA?
I do, and yes, I've used it to do things.
Okay, just wanted to check to make sure. Just a little DMV tip for people out there. AAA is awesome.
So. It is. It's not expensive, and you do get discounts. You just got to ask all the time.
What does AAA help you with the DMV?
I think they can do almost everything the DMV can do, right?
Yes, AAA can do every single thing that's DMV related except driver's license renewal, and I do believe driver testing. So those are the only two things. Other than that, registration for a vehicle, DMV literature, anything that's DMV related with the exception of driver's license renewal.
They can do it they can do a change of address for you too.
Yep. And you just pay whatever you pay per year for AAA, and it's so much better than standing in line.
Yeah. Good to know.
Good. Did we get sponsorship on that, Bart? AAA
no,
is going to be very happy.
No, it's just from my own personal experience and everybody's related experience of standing in line in a DMV. And a little fun fact, statistic is the average person in their entire lifetime, from the day you're born to the day you die, you will stand in line 2 to 3 years. I'm all about the breaks and cutting the line.
All right. Cutting the line is not cool. Finding a way to avoid it, I'm all for. One last thing before we get to inside baseball is I was listening on the radio, NPR. There was a debate on the California propositions. It was very interesting. In fact, I wish there had been more traffic so I could have listened to the whole thing.
Don't put that out into the world.
It doesn't change anything. So the thing I want to comment on, California, as everyone knows, has all these voter initiatives and propositions that we have to vote on, whether we understand them or not. So in this show, they just went in order from one, starting with number 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and so on. 1, 2, 3, and 4 were all bond initiatives for good things. Children's hospitals, schools, affordable housing, mental health care. And so they had people on. It was a good show because they had someone on just explaining it. Then they had a pro and a con. And the con guy was some libertarian. Every time there was a bond initiative, he said, although you may think that that aim is noble, remember, this money comes from somewhere. And if it's a bond initiative for $5 million, it's actually going to cost 10 when you pay the interest, and California can't afford that. And he said it for number 1, and he said it for number 2, and he said it 3 and 4. Number 5 was not a bond, it was a tax reduction proposal, which is going to, of course, reduce revenues to the state of California. It's more entrenchment of Prop 13, which is the classic 70s prop that nearly killed California. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but this, they're still trying to prop it up and revive it and make it stronger to this day. And there's a proposition on the ballot in this November to strengthen some parts of Prop 13. And of course, this libertarian fiscal conservative guy, of course, when he got to this one, said, oh, no, this one's fine. And for the first 4, where he was making these fiscal responsibility arguments, he actually sounded very reasonable. If you didn't know much about politics, you might have even been persuaded by what he was saying. Because some of these bond initiatives for good causes are expensive, and they saddle you with debt in the future, interest payments and all. But of course, when it came to tax cutting, especially for elder and rich people, he was all in favor. It's so transparent, the SOB that this guy is. But
you know the old line, giving tax cuts puts like, it's as if the economy is a video game character that runs on money from like, released from tax cuts and only from tax cuts.
Right.
No, you can't give that. And it's like true, economically speaking. You put more money into the economy does better, really roughly, broadly speaking. There are obviously limits to that. But you can do that through tax cuts. You can do that through government spending. You can do that through good, like smart investments. You can do that through a good combination of those. But it's always this hard line between, no, we can't pay for this thing that we need to pay for, otherwise it'll crumble or is already crumbling and won't really do the job. Because all these bonds are usually for things that are past broken. Like, it's not like, oh, mental health is starting to be a little bit of a problem now, so let's get like a small bond to put a Band-Aid on it so this problem doesn't become bigger. No, it's a big issue now, especially compounded with the homelessness issue in major metropolitan areas of California. And so, of course, there's never money for those things, but there's always room in the budget for tax cuts. It's always so fun.
Yeah. State level and federal level. Then they got to
even in California, which is like you would expect it to be a little different.
Well, California passed some really important tax increases in the past couple of years. Jerry Brown has amazingly done a good job of getting the state back into a decent shape. And he's leaving office at the end of this year. So we'll
and Gavin Newsom, his attorney general, who's been waiting to be governor since he was a zygote. Like, he's like, I've met Gavin Newsom, and I have thoughts that I'll mostly keep to myself, but like, he's just trying to be the perfect poster child for, I've focus grouped my smile and my grin to make sure that I will get my freaking seat because I want that governorship so I can be president. Like, he's that kind of guy.
But he doesn't strike me as presidential. He strikes me, it was an excellent image of a mayor of San Francisco, which is what he was.
I mean, it doesn't matter if anyone strikes you as anything. People have their ambitions and they'll go for it.
All right, we'll see how that goes.
Some are just like more nakedly obvious than others.
Needless to say, I'll vote for him. And I don't know what your private thoughts are. It doesn't matter right now. So then they got into this Proposition 8, I think, which is an obscure battle between the health insurance companies and the dialysis companies that even the people on the panel barely understood. And the voters, you, me, everyone here has to vote and decide, should we vote in favor of the dialysis companies or the health insurance companies? It's ridiculous. And they even said that on the panel. Most people can't figure this out. It's a battle between two special interests who couldn't resolve their differences, so they're going to the voters with it. And one of them said, if you don't understand it, you should vote no out of principle, which is what a lot of people like Cenk and Ben say. I'm not sure that's right.
I don't agree with, if you don't agree with it, you shouldn't just vote on it. Like, you can skip that one if you want
abstain.
To. Abstain. Yeah. Because sometimes voting no does a bad thing.
Yeah, right. And voting no is not the right answer.
Yeah, I heard a podcast about all the different propositions. On the dialysis one, it's interesting because the dialysis companies are concerned and the insurance companies are concerned. And it's like, one side is choosing, it's really, like you said, it's just special interests using the proposition system in California to duke out their battle. Mm-hmm. And so that means whoever has the better messaging wins, not necessarily the better idea.
Right.
Which doesn't help voters at all.
And then another proposition is to repeal a gas tax that went into effect a few years ago, very recent, maybe last year, 2 years ago. I'm always torn on these because I like gas tax, but I don't like regressive taxes. So I'm going to vote to keep the gas tax because I hate the carbon-based economy, so. But I'm not happy about having to vote. But that one's being used. The Republicans actually put it on the ballot because they're hoping that a popular anti-tax measure on the ballot will help Republican candidates. And they're right, and maybe it will. It could tip the balance in a few close elections, state elections. So
of course.
We'll see that. All right, so those are all the stories. That was a good lineup.
I will say the cool proposition that I'm kind of interested to see how it goes, Prop 7 about daylight savings time.
But it's also the most irrelevant because it requires federal action. It doesn't matter what California did.
Well, there are states that don't do daylight saving.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know why this isn't. But everything I've heard and read is that this would just be California voting and then waiting for the federal government to do something. I don't know why the states, Arizona, Indiana, who don't do it, cannot do it, but California would have to wait. I don't quite get that.
I don't know. I just want to see what people's opinions are.
It will be an interesting public opinion test. I love the switching clocks and the daylight savings and the standard times. I'm surprised that there are people who are against it, but it's not that important.
Sure.
So Dan works on two relatively new shows here.
Let's talk about my life.
Yeah, No Filter, hosted by the illustrious Anna Kasparian, and The Damage Report, hosted by John Iadarola.
Both illustrious.
Yes, both illustrious. Both came out of the main show. But we have a lot of new members, thousands actually, who are just in the past month. And even the old members might not quite know that these shows exist, what they are, how to watch them. So what are No Filter and The Damage Report? How do they differ from each other, from the main show? What are they adding?
Right.
Why do they exist? And then we'll get into how to watch them and all.
So I'll talk about the damage report first. I'll say how to watch them. So if you tune out of the rest of this conversation, if you somehow made it this far, you can watch them on YouTube TV and potentially other platforms coming soon. We have clips of them on clips of No Filter on the Young Turks main YouTube channel in the TYT app. And clips of the damage report are in the TYT app and on damage report YouTube page, youtube.com/thedamagereport. And everything's available as a podcast. So you can get the whole episode fully, yes.
Okay, that's
good to
know.
And I love podcasts. I think full episodes are cool. And here's where I'll start to get into the differences. Damage Report is filmed as a live weekday morning show. And so you could easily just kind of do like a 1 hour weekday morning main show, but you kind of don't want to do that. Not necessarily because there's anything wrong with the main show, but just because I think John has a lot of talents that can be like worked with that can also differentiate the show. Plus, like, it's cool. So one thing we do on the Damage Report a lot is we have a bunch of different interviews and guests. We have this internal joke whenever John has two guests, because we all giving John terrible nicknames. We call it Johnny Two Skypes, because it's a day where we have two Skype interviews where these are people who work in politics or different organizations that are doing different change making things. And you get to learn how people are actually making a difference, because if you just run down through the stories that we do every day, it gets depressing and sad. But there's a little bit of hope in seeing people who are really excited about like doing things, and whether it's in just the environment or just with immigration. I'm saying just not to belittle them, but like they're really laser focused on different issues, not necessarily the big picture, which we see as on a broadcast like this. But you get a little energy from how hard they're working, how much they're interested, what they know, what they can bring to the table. And it's like, it's a great experience to work on.
How is there an interview every day or almost every day?
Pretty much, yeah.
And story selection, how much does it overlap or not overlap what the main show covers?
So because the news cycle is fast enough to justify like having a morning, I mean like you can always, they always had morning and afternoon news, but now like the news in the morning can radically change from the news in the evening. So, and with the news that happened overnight can radically change from when the main show aired. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of like bridging that time gap in a way. It also gives us a time to talk about issues that may not be covered on the main show so much. So I'm working on a segment that, because again, I want to talk about more world news, called Meanwhile In, where we just like talk about world news stories. And sometimes they're tragic or sometimes have a whimsical theme. But it's things you wouldn't normally be able to talk about on the main show.
But are they always truly news, as in they just happened in the past day or two? Or is it an issue that may be more evergreen or happened a few months ago? Or
it's usually ongoing? Within the past week.
Okay. All right, anything more on the damage report? Or do you explain what No Filter is?
I can explain No Filter, and then I can get to your big question of like what makes them different.
Yeah, okay.
And so No Filter is once weekly, and it's with Anna Kasparian. It's one of the few scripted shows on the network, mm-hmm. and that's been a controversial decision for people. Some people don't like that, some people do. I think of it like this, especially because now that we're doing it as a podcast, I can think of it compared to other podcasts I like. There are a lot of podcasts out there that are heavily produced, and they have sound effects here and there.
Yeah.
And we can do some of those things, but as great as our team is, we're small and we don't always have the time and turnaround. We're not just working on one show, we're working on many things at a time. So better still, it's more production you can do over a week's time span than over a day or a night, like it is with Damage Report. So because of that, we can do deep dives into certain topics. Because it's once weekly and the clips distribute in different ways, it's not always like the most newsworthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that because like you can pay attention to the news and that's useful to be on top of. But there's also larger cultural things that are going on. Larger topics or issues that are influencing how people even approach politics. And I think that No Filter provides a great way to do that. So like, for example, when we were talking about the Khashoggi murder, the journalist who was murdered in Turkey by Saudi Arabia, allegedly, all that stuff. We talked about that on the last episode, but we also juxtaposed it, and this was Anna's idea, so credit for her for sure. But we chose to juxtapose it with the idea of how Americans, or not people just in general, how we handle death.
Mm-hmm.
And that if there's a death of one person or two people, we can kind of internalize it more or understand it more. But if it's a massacre or a genocide of a large number of people, you sort of externalize yourself from it. And it's a psychological thing. It transcends party. It's just kind of how people work.
Right.
And it's, when it relates to American politics, that's kind of how we see like mass shootings, where it's such a high number of people dying in mass shootings in America, that could be leading to why we don't do anything about it. Because other countries, they have one or a couple and it's out of the norm for them. It's wild. But because of the numbers, even though more deaths is bad, the scale kind of numbs us.
There are other factors at play.
But
first of all, that's why storytelling is so great. And Ronald Reagan knew that. So he would focus on the one welfare mother in Chicago or whatever, instead of the overall picture. But also with Khashoggi, which is how I pronounce it, maybe that's wrong, he was writing columns for the Washington Post. He was part of the media establishment, so the people writing about it and talking about it on TV and in the newspapers might have known him.
I've thought about that a lot, that like when, especially when it's a story that has to do with the media will definitely overreport it because
right.
It's like inside baseball, but it's the industry where the media's happenings and rumblings about what it's doing kind of make it out to the public in ways that I think is happening more with sports and music and things like that, but when something happens in the media will really make a big deal out of it. Maybe
right.
Perhaps more so than, I'm not saying like, this is a very important story and I'm glad people are talking about foreign affairs, but like there are very important things that are happening locally and in the state, or like
right.
in America that right. are tragedies that involve poverty and all these other issues, but we're devoting news time to this because of the people making those decisions, you're right, have those relationships.
Right, right. I mean, this is not about the Khashoggi. That's well discussed everywhere else on TUIT. The obvious contrast is the Saudi Arabia killing some thousands, tens of thousands of people in Yemen versus this one guy and the disparity in coverage. But by the way, do you, I don't know if I just know this because I picked it up or if everyone knows. Do you know the other Khashoggi family members? Does everyone know how who his relatives are?
I don't know anything other than about his fiance, which is really sad.
So his grandfather was the doctor for the guy who created Saudi Arabia, King Saud, 100 years ago or whenever. One of his uncles is a big figure from the 80s in the Iran-Contra scandal. Adnan Khashoggi, who was a big arms dealer, of course, very wealthy businessman. He was central to the Iran-Contra. He helped sell all the arms that Reagan used to get money to fund the Contras, etc. So he was big in the news in the 80s all the time, this guy's uncle. He was so rich, he bought this yacht, but then he ran into troubles and he eventually, either next or one person away, sold it to Donald Trump for $29 million, but Trump effed up his affairs and he sold the yacht to some other Saudi prince for $20 million. So the great businessman lost $9 million in that deal, but the Saudis bailed out his bankrupt casino in Atlantic City. So Trump probably actually made out overall on that terrible deal. And
I have no financial relationship with the Saudis or Russia, in case you were asking.
Very good. You don't look the part, but it sounds good. And this guy, Dodi Fayed, Princess Di's boyfriend, is like a cousin of this Khashoggi dude. So he's everywhere.
I mean, like it's, you can say that, but I feel like this is just the elites. And I hate to brute this into a certain thing, but let's look at Anderson Cooper. He's a Vanderbilt. It's
yeah.
one of the richest families in like American history. And you look at other people in media, they're connected and have these other relationships. I mean, like Woody Allen's son is Ronan Farrow.
Right.
Like, there are all these different connections that are out there that are always very strange. But I didn't know that about Khashoggi's son.
Yeah, I wonder if other people know that. Especially the Dodi Fayed thing really
but
surprised me.
About the differences between the shows.
Yes.
And so the benefit to No Filter is that you can deep dive into a certain topic or issue. But obviously, with a damage report, you literally just have more time. And so you can talk about more things. You can kind of branch out. We can do fun segments. I mean, we do fun segments on both. And yeah, I also love everything Brett does. Brett usually produces the C block for No Filter, which is usually like lighter hearted or more like funny. On the last episode of No Filter, we did Fascist Week. So it was a look into the European far right and the fascists that are rising up to power using the American playbook many times of, oh no, this isn't fascism, we're just protecting free speech, and this isn't racism, this is ethno-nationalism, all those horse crap, like, distortions.
Yeah.
But we turned into like a fun fashion show thing. Yeah, I just love doing stuff like that.
I'm not a fan of the attempts at humor, but everyone knows that.
We're very well aware.
Yeah, so in No Filter, the name implies that Anna speaks completely freely, but in this day and age, doesn't happen anywhere anymore.
So I wanted to get to that point. So yes, there's a script for the show, but the script is written by three people, me, Brett, and Anna, mostly Anna. Mm-hmm. Brett will usually like workshop some of the funny parts in C block, and then if it's a topic that I'm really passionate about and know about, like Anna will give me the chance to write a lot of it, and that's been like really cool to do.
Good.
But it's largely us three. So if you want to think that, oh, someone's controlling what Anna's saying, I've broken the secret, it's us three. Other than that, like what is in the prompter is what she's saying.
Yeah.
And what she's reading. So that whole uncensored thing still applies. And the same thing with The Breakdown, the other scripted shows on the network. Yes, they're scripted because the presentation kind of helps a little bit. You can prepare a lot more. But we're the runs writing the script. It's no any other like entity. So the like independentness still applies.
Yeah, but the ideas of speaking frankly when, say, Cenk started his career in radio in the late 90s compared to today are completely different. You can't be the wild shock jock anymore. Everyone wanted to be Howard Stern back in the 90s, including Cenk, but no way now with the environment.
I disagree. You have people on the right who are largely into the shock jock humor. I mean, I follow these people, so I'll mention one. Steven Crowder, during the, he's a popular YouTuber. Mm-hmm. During the Kavanaugh hearings, he did a joke, so you already wouldn't like it, that was called Everything You Need to Know About Kavanaugh But We're Afraid to Ask, Lying Whore Edition, talking about Christine Blasey Ford.
Right.
And so that got views. People liked it. They thought it was edgy. I think it's horrible and like just extremely tasteless. And like you can be conservative and have a point about
partially
that.
Partially corrected.
Yeah, but people, there's an appetite for that, unfortunately.
Right. All right, so I gotta go. I'm gonna sit in my car. I'm either gonna listen to something good on NPR or maybe quickly download No Filter's podcast.
And the Damage Report.
Or I can get it from the app, right? I don't need to download it.
Yeah, so if you have the TYT app, just ignore everything I said earlier. It's really easy to get everything from that.
But you have to be a TYT member.
No, you can. You don't have to be a TYT member. I mean, if you're a TYT member, if you're seeing this right now, most likely, so you can get it. But the podcasts are free to anyone. And they're available in Apple Podcasts if you're listening there. I love this app called Pocket Cast that's like a customized podcast experience. It's really great. And I can get it on that.
Okay, No Filter with Anna Kasparian. Here it is.
Yes. I really care about podcasts. We put a lot of effort into making sure the podcast version is pretty good. Like obviously, the version you can see on video on YouTube TV is like the premium experience. But we try really hard to make sure the podcast is a good experience because that's how I like to consume things. So listen to them, please.
I might want to ask you about that on a future postgame show because I have some thoughts about our podcasting.
I would love to talk about that.
All right, so that's our Friday postgame show. Thank you for being patient with us and being members. I hope we gave you a little something.
Could have been nothing.
Yeah, right. Could have been nothing, but this we enjoy doing it. And the great thing about TYT is how much the audience loves it and the reaction we get. So it's gratifying to do this. So thank you and have a good weekend.